Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Well, hello everybody and welcome. You've tuned in to episode number 187 of Linux in the Ham Shack. And this one's going to be a little bit different. It's going to be free form and a free for all. And we're going to talk about all kinds of different things. And they may or may not be amateur radio and open source related. And they may be. We don't really know. But I'm Russ, K5TUX, the usual host for the evening. And we also have Cheryl.
Hello, everyone.
And we have, from big getting warmer, Sky Country, Montana, Bill, NE4RD.
Good evening, everyone.
We have Eric, who is not a ham, but says it could be interesting to him someday.
I have relatives who are hams.
Okay, so
that counts. Yep.
Yeah, friends of my hams. Second degree of separation, so it's closer than Kevin Bacon.
Very good. And we also have Rob, and his call sign has scrolled off my screen, so he'll just have to tell us what it is.
Yeah, it's KD2MSR.
KD2MSR. So where are you at, Rob?
I am in Oneonta, New York. It's just upstate area of New York.
All right, very good. And the reason that we're having a roundtable discussion tonight is because we're lazy. That's why. Because actually, Bill's not lazy. Bill did lots of work for the show, which he'll probably regret later.
Bill always does lots of work.
Yep, he's the glue that binds the show together.
Aww.
Yeah.
The rest of us were too busy to be bothered, so we just brought a bunch of people on to talk about some stuff. So there we go. And we had a huge discussion about thermostats and electrical wiring and all kinds of stuff and a little bit of EE. Maybe I'll just put that at the end of the episode or something so everybody can experience the wonder of the wonder of my furnace.
Yay.
This will be like the added content for all the supporters.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
It's worth every penny.
So if you want to do electrical wiring badly, stay tuned. Okay. But we should probably at least try and have a little bit of a show before we do that. And Bill, you know what? Since you put all of this stuff in here, you're probably going to have to carry us a little bit. We can talk a little amateur radio before we roam too far afield.
All right, Bill, knock yourself out.
Yeah, we've got a couple things here, just new from the ARRL. We have new bands. The FCC issues amateur radio service rules for 630 meters and 2,200 meters. So it's been a long time coming, but the amateur service will get two new bands in the near future. The FCC on March 28 adopted rules that will allow secondary amateur radio access to 472 to 479 kilohertz. That's your 630 meter band. And to 135.7 to 137.8 kilohertz. That's the 2200 meter band with some minor conditions. Basically, there's some power limit restrictions on both of these bands. And I believe the 630 meters is 5 watts. I'm just guessing. The 2200 meters is a 1 watt limitation on it. So we've talked about 630 meters here in the past. And how there's been a lot of testing, and I've been on Whisper with it and stuff like that, just listening. And there's quite a bit of activity, but now it looks like they're going to roll it out here to the rest of us. And I believe we are still secondary on these. That's probably why there's such a low power requirement for it.
Probably so. And so you've actually done a little listening. You said you were listening on the 630. Is that what you're doing, Bill?
Yeah. I've done some Whisper listening on 630 meters.
So where is your propagation on 630?
It's Canada and pretty much I'd say about a 600 mile circle.
Okay.
So not bad. I'm not sure. I'm assuming they're running, whatever the regulated power is, 10 watts or whatever. And obviously at that low frequency, you have to have quite a bit of a sky wire.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just a little bit of length to your antenna. Otherwise, you get tons of loss anyway. Which will probably be how most amateurs will get onto it. They'll just calculate the loss input to the good old tuner that's going to soak it all up. And what little is left will get out to that antenna. But like with most low power modes, obviously it still does a pretty darn fine job.
Yeah, because a quarter wave is 215, so 107.5 meters. Quarter wave is longer than a football field. So yeah, that's a big antenna.
So basically, most people probably just have some huge capacitance hat, which will be the actual horizontal part of the antenna, and then they'll have some small vertical radiator. Right. There are many plans and stuff like that for loaded antennas and stuff like that that are already kind of making their way to the internet. So if you're interested in trying that out, and your radio is already opened up where you can transmit to that, when it becomes available, it'll soon be available because this is all part of the same region updates that we've been talking about.
All right, very cool. So I guess I can read the next one. This is an easy one. So I'll give you a second to breathe there, Bill.
It's along the same lines. It's basically a very similar thing.
Right. So. Okay. Well, we have another story about Cuba instituting new amateur radio regulations. Cuban hams are scrutinizing and debating the details of new regulations for the island nation. The Cuban Ministry of Communications adopted the new regulatory scheme on February 28th. IARU Region 2 posted the new amateur radio service regulations as a PDF, but it's in Spanish, so make sure you have your translator or your high school Spanish hat on. Three license classes are available. First class licensees have CO prefix call signs and may run up to 2,000 watts unauthorized bands. Second class licenses have CM prefix calls, may run up to 100 watts. And third class licenses have CL prefixes and can run up to 10 whole watts. Upgrading from second to first class requires 3 years of experience in the lower license category. Wow, that's pretty strict. While upgrading from third to second class requires 2 years experience in the lower license category. First and second class licenses must pass a 5 words per minute Morse code test. Wow, they're strict down there. But Just like everything in Cuba, it's about 40 years behind. So,
it's really not a bad setup that they have. And they also have the new 630 meters and 2200 meters with the same limitation of power. So there are a lot of caveats to those power regulations, just like there are here in the U.S. They have to follow. We're in the same region, so they have to follow the same requirements. They also have 60 meter access, and I believe they're at 50 watts. And I believe there's also an antenna height restriction too on that above ground level.
All right.
Mind if I ask a newbie dumb question?
No, that's exactly what these are all for. So go for it.
Great. Great. What was it like before? What was like the ham signals coming out of Cuba? Like, were there very many people talking from Cuba before?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've worked Cuba back into the 90s when I first was licensed. So
10 and 15 meters regularly have people from Cuba on. So there's great propagation on those bands out of Cuba into the United States. I used to work
Cuba on 2 meter sideband as well. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, when you get a little tropospheric ducting going, sure, why not?
No.
When you were in Florida, sure. Not from Montana. Florida,
yeah.
Yeah.
Not now. Hails no.
Hails no.
Yeah. All right. So I worked them on RS-10.
You don't know of any, like, the Cuban government trying to track or crack down on transmissions of from ham radio guys from the island?
I mean, no, licensed, hams are licensed in Cuba, and they're, ready legal to operate just like anybody else. So, and yeah,
there's like third party traffic restrictions and stuff like that. Like there has been, right. But that's different, just straight point to point communication is fine. But when it gets to third party traffic, then you got to pull out the old, handy dandy, don't talk to this country and pass, someone else's message to a person to pass to someone else.
Got it. That's how they got around it.
Yeah, it's like you can work Venezuela and everything else, as well, which, is another one of the hot spots for over here.
But even the United States has third-party communication rules for amateur radio, so it's not like it's only in Cuba where they're restrictive of these kind of things. So it's just a function of what communications are permitted to the amateur radio class, that's all.
Got it.
So
thanks.
No problem. All right, Bill, you're up again.
I didn't have any more for amateur radio. I was going to try to get on this weekend and do the AM rally and stuff like that. But As usual, I was having antenna issues.
I was having life issues.
I did notice my noise floor went down. So I actually have a somewhat normal noise floor now. So at least that problem went away. But I think that had to do with that flare.
I've had my radio on 40 meters lately, and actually the propagation has been fairly good here. I don't know about, and the noise floor is, I don't know where it usually is, about 3S units for me. So not too bad, at least on 40.
Yeah. Does your antenna start to fail after it gets a little old?
It will oxidize. Like, you'll have your connection points and stuff like that. They'll begin to oxidize, especially when you're talking about matching copper to aluminum.
Oh yeah.
If you haven't put any type of Nolox or something like that on there to prevent any type of oxidation, it will react a little bit, and over time you'll start losing that circuit.
So it's just the connections that could go bad.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are also components in the antenna, like some are trapped where they have like a separate coil of wire inside to make the element electrically longer. Those can go bad because water can get in, and again, they can deteriorate from that. I have an antenna that has capacitors on it. Those tend to go bad too over time. Just strain of the antenna being up there, swinging around in the wind and stuff like that can cause various strain points and stuff like that. So there's always maintenance that you have to do to maintain an antenna system.
Got it.
All right, cool. So that's our amateur radio topics for the evening, at least as far as we've gone. And we've got a couple of things we can touch on in the open source world. So as I said before, Bill, you're up.
Had one of these articles pop up, the best open source software of 2017. We're only here in the first quarter of the year, and there's already a best list out. And, generally these are always clickbait and, to get ad revenue or whatever for the website. But I had to click through because I was looking for stuff, and I was able to find something I haven't seen before, which was Shotcut, which is a open source video editor. This was listed as their best open source video editor, although they did point to, I think, Lightroom as the best non-open source video editor for Linux. So, I kind of played around Shotcut a little bit. I didn't get to really editing files and stuff like that. I did take a look at some videos and some of the tools and features and stuff like that, and it looks pretty cool, and maybe I'll do a little bit further review on it if there's any interest. Other items on the list, no surprise, GIMP was in there, Firefox, Thunderbird, VLC, Audacity, and KeePass, which I haven't used KeePass before, but I know that's become real popular again with all the Vault 7 releases and all the broken CIA and NSA having copies of backdoors to all these other password stores and stuff like that. So that was over on Tech Radar, and I'm sure eventually this stuff will get in the show notes.
It will eventually get to the show notes, yes. And I actually use KeePass a lot. That's a great utility for us at work. So,
I use GIMP all the time myself too.
Yeah, I use GIMP too for any kind of photo editing or anything like that. I use it for all kinds of stuff, doing brochures. Like when you at our booth, like all of the pamphlets that we pass out, like our banner, anything that's production quality stuff is pretty much done in GIMP. It's either done in GIMP or Scribus, depending on whether it's like a published document or more image based and PDF based. So one of those two things I use. So
I think they just recently, or not too long ago, but they had an updated release of GIMP 2.8.2.
Yeah. The greatest thing that happened in GIMP 2.8 was that they had the single window mode. That was the one thing that made GIMP like perfectly usable for me again. So,
yes.
Because I sort of understand the non-dock toolbars and stuff like that, but my brain doesn't function that way. I have to have a screen with an app on it. So,
yeah.
But yeah, GIMP is an incredibly powerful tool, and as long as you didn't come from like the Adobe Illustrator or Adobe Creator side of things, it's very easy to learn GIMP. But if you already learned Adobe, then you have a little bit of a steeper curve getting into GIMP. But you probably should, because it's very super powerful software.
Yeah.
All right, so Bill, I guess you're going to have to do this one too. Oh, you know what? You just got to, well, wait. Maybe we can get Cheryl to read this one. It's just a story, so she can like sit up straight and lean closer to the microphone.
Yeah, but now I have to open up the document again. So what am I doing? Whoa, wait.
Why don't you open up the document on your laptop, which is sitting in front of you?
Because I can't get into my email.
Oh, all right, fine. Well, we'll wait for you to pull up the Google Doc on your phone.
I have it right here, and there is something wrong with my laptop.
Let's just not worry about your laptop right now, okay? There's so many other things going on right now.
My screen keeps going dark on it.
Oh, God. So. It's because of my furnace wiring, isn't it?
It probably is. Exactly.
Russ, that's a pre-show joke.
It's a teaser now.
Everybody's got to subscribe in order to get the additional content.
Right.
All right, fine. I'll do the next story. Jeez.
Okay.
So our next story tonight is open source promised and removed Tetris microcard by Arduboy. The Tetris microcard is a version of Arduboy, an 8-bit Arduino-based handheld device which plays open source software. The device was supposed to ship with Tetris and a second user reprogrammable chip. I received my Tetris microcard yesterday. First impressions? Tetris plays great. I love the horizontal form factor. That said, I'm very disappointed the second chip was removed from the final version of the board. I feel cheated. I'm extremely disappointed in the Arduboy team and customer service due to lack of transparency and communication regarding the Tetris microcard product and for silently removing the second reprogrammable chip from the final release. And that was a story from Reddit.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about Reddit before we end the show. Yeah. So, but anyway. That wasn't from you. That was from Arduboy's point of view. That wasn't Bill's point of view.
So. Yeah, that's from Arduboy's point of view. And this is a buyer beware when you get these Kickstarters and stuff like that. You may not get exactly what you ordered, but being an open source, quote unquote, project, you would think that there would be a little bit better communication and transparency among the process. But I've seen this all too. Too often recently with a lot of these projects and stuff like that. So, I'm starting to steer away from even paying attention to all these Kickstarters now.
Yeah, some of them, there's a lot of FUD and cruft and stuff in the Kickstarter world, but every once in a while, a little gem comes along, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's still good to watch them, kind of just see like what's going to be coming to market and stuff like that.
I saw there was a Kickstarter for a really nice drone that came out, and it wasn't that long ago, and some of the really, like, the 4K quality 3-mile range drones are upwards of like $4,000 or $5,000, and this was one of those, and it was coming in like under $1,000.
So
that might be something worth looking at. And then there was another one, I can't remember if it was a Kickstarter or not, but it was about 4 months ago, I think, and it was an Indian company that was putting out $700 wind turbines.
I think it's been longer than that.
May have been a little longer. It wasn't that long ago, though. And I don't know if that one got funded or not, but if it did, I am definitely going to be looking at doing wind power out here, because we could power our entire friggin' neighborhood from our backyard. Right? that was pretty amazing. And I think the $700 was like the production price, and it was actually cheaper. You could get like two of them for that if you were in on the Kickstarter. So, and these are 1 kilowatt turbines. Wow. So, yeah, that seemed amazing. I don't know if it got funded or not. I need to go back and look at that, but if it did, I want to check it out.
Yeah, I was following and actually decided to dive into an Indiegogo campaign for a camera stabilizer, but you attach your cell phone or a GoPro to it. It's one of those gyroscopic units that have like three-axis.
Yeah, three-axis gyro stabilizer. I saw that one. Yeah,
I think it was like $170, and what kind of convinced me to kind of get into it was they had a working prototype of it and a couple of working prototypes instead of just nothing that they like, hey, we want to do this, but we haven't developed it yet. And it also has an integrated battery pack into it. So while your camera is or your phone is taking this video, you can plug your phone right into the handheld unit itself. I thought it was pretty cool.
That is very cool. I need to jump back a story for a second. In the chat room, we were talking about GIMP and so on. Actually, that's two stories ago. Steve KD0IJP said he prefers Inkscape for graphic editing over GIMP. And Inkscape is great. It's very heavyweight, though, and it's a little. I think the learning curve is a little steeper than GIMP, quite frankly. But Jim seconded his opinion about Inkscape. You can take or leave Inkscape, I think, depending on if it fits your workflow. But I personally prefer GIMP. I don't know if anybody else has an opinion on Inkscape versus GIMP. But
I'm not much of an artistic type. Like, I couldn't draw. I'm barely good at Hangman. And so for me, GIMP seems to work pretty darn well. for it's, what I can do. Anything else above Hangman, I'd have to talk to someone who probably uses Inkscape.
The thing I like most about GIMP is it makes me feel like I'm talented. I think
that is an excellent description. I know. I walk away after finishing something like, okay, I could. I like think I'm a graphic designer for like 2 seconds. Like, oh no, I'm not.
Right? Yeah, Inkscape's more for doing painting and hand drawing stuff and stuff like that. And yeah, that's a much more powerful tool for that. I know I've tried doing GIMP with a few things like that, and it's really a pain in the butt.
Right.
Yeah, just drawing straight lines is tough with GIMP type of.
And then you can just go way overboard and use something like Blender, and. And actually do like animations and vectorizing and all kinds of crazy stuff. But yeah, Blender is a tool for real graphic artists, not for the hacks among us. So, all right. So anyway, that is all we had for open source topics. So we're going to move into Linux and the Ham Shack. And Bill has been playing around with some Echolink stuff, and specifically SVX Link, Qtail, and the bridge. So let's talk about your experiences with that.
Yeah, so basically I was setting up an Echolink server for so we have a backup server for Jamboree on the Air and also for the National Jamboree for Boy Scouts this summer. So I kind of promised to do it, I don't know, probably like about 9 months ago, and I finally got around to messing with it. The last week I started messing with it or something like that.
Yeah.
So I found the client, you know, the bridge, and or the server, the bridge, and I had to compile that. Obviously, I couldn't find a package for it anywhere, and so I compiled it. It does put stuff in weird places. You know, it's definitely I should have prefixed it and put it all in one place, but I just kind of went with the defaults, and I got it up and running. I configured the comp file, and then I realized, oh, I actually have to go out and register this thing so I can actually have my conference channel, because we needed a, you know, conference bridge so a lot of scouts from different areas can talk to each other and stuff like that without having to worry about propagation. But that whole process was pretty easy. Basically, you send out an email to the manager of the Echolink stuff. You do a PayPal for $40, I believe it is, a year, and you can reserve a conference node of your choice. Mine was a Star Jambo Star, so really easy to find for Jamboree people and you know, National Jamboree people and Jamboree on the Air. There already is a Jota 365 and a Jota BR and a bunch of other ones that are out there. So this was my experience. It went really well. I'm currently running it from my ThinkPad here on my connection. I have seen people connect to it. Right now I'm running it in debug mode, so I can kind of see all the intermediate traffic and what it's actually doing when it's talking to the network, and it gives you a lot of interesting statistics when people are trying to connect. I was talking to Russ about that the other day while we were smoking a cigar, and how if your client is connected in two different places, apparently the Echolink network only really respects one of those as the authorized client. So let's say you have your computer at home connected to Echolink, and then you connect your phone, and then you try to connect to a conference server with your phone, your IP address will not match the one at home, so it will kick you out as an unauthorized user. So that was kind of interesting to watch and see that on the console as it was flying by. But yeah, other than that, I mean, it had very minimal requirements. I don't think I even had to download any additional libraries to get the compile to work. Like I said, does stuff the comp file in a random place, and the executable is also in a random place as well. So I have to load it up via the full path. I don't have it in my path right now. But then I also looked at Qtail, because I hadn't used the client side on the Linux in a long time. So Qtail is just a Qt application or Qt application, and it looks pretty much just like the Windows one, you know, minus some of the menuing and stuff like that. It's not quite the same, but works just the same. And that one, you normally can find a package in most repositories. If not, you can always go to svxlink.org and download it and compile it yourself. I'm pretty certain that the only thing it's going to need is Qt and a compiler. So, if you haven't done Echolink, it's still widely used. And you can also connect this into Asterisk, so you can run all star connections. as well as you can also link it into a rig if you want to actually pipe it out to a local amateur radio repeater or whatever. So, yeah, it's pretty powerful, and I wouldn't say too hard to get going. The hardest part was just getting the registration through, which took about 24 hours. So once you're registered, it'll show up on the list so everybody else can connect to it.
Yeah, SVX Link as a server part doesn't require any of that registration. You just did the bridge, and you want the registration was for the conference node, right? Not for the actual.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, for the conference node. For to run Qtel, you don't need anything except for a valid login for the Echo Link network, which I believe you can get for free with the valid license.
Right. And
amateur license.
Yeah. And I did the same thing with SVX Link. I didn't have a conference node, obviously, but I had a link node. I used my Rascal GLX connected to my 2-meter rig and ran SVX Link and actually had K5TUX-L. And I actually have a custom node number and everything for all of that, but I need to get it back on the air because the Raspberry Pi I was running it on is like in a drawer somewhere. So, you know, one of these days. And Qtel is the client part. It's written by SM0SVX, and we've talked about that a little bit before on past episodes, which is a native Echolink client for Linux. You can run the Windows Echolink client under Wine, but if you want to be straight up Linux and open source, SVX Link is the way to go. And what's the license on the bridge? Is it GPL?
I believe so. I have it here open. Let me see which tab is it in.
The bridge, Echolink. Let's see. We're all Googling.
I'm not. I'm the only one that's done.
Well, for a change, you're not the one that's finding out.
Yeah,
all the
usually
information,
the one right? I'm usually the one looking everything up. So.
I don't see it.
The bridge. Let's see. I found a link to the page.
Yeah, it's on CQI or
net. Right, CQI.net. Right.
Yeah.
Is it on as the source on GitHub? Because GitHub usually publishes the license.
No, they have it all on SourceForge. I don't know.
Well, SourceForge, right. There. SourceForge summary. Let's see as we waste time. GPL2. It's GPL2. There we go. Well, that was a waste of time.
So if you want to test my notes, please go ahead and do it.
Yeah, and usually I'm the one wasting everybody's time. So.
Hey, at least you admit it.
Yeah, well.
Oh, I just got the finger. And everybody knows which one.
Okay. Number one. You, dear, are number one. That's what you are.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, the only ham radio podcast that doesn't put me to sleep.
Hey, that's my line.
Oh, okay. I was yep.
That actually is Bill's line, and I left it up there because that he sent us that before he was one of the hosts, and then when he became one of the hosts, I thought it was amusing just to leave it as a quote.
Yeah, I'm reading it right off the website here.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Now it really doesn't put me to sleep.
That's right.
Well, yeah, because you never get a chance.
I think you've fallen asleep once.
And where did you get the extra badgers from?
Oh, the badgers. You're going to have to go back to listen to some back episodes if you want to find out about the badgers. So. I can give you a badger, I think.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, well, actually, it's not loud enough. Here we go.
Badger.
That's what he uses to cover up curse words. So.
Right. Instead of a bleep in the edited version, you hear a badger.
Got it. Oh, I understand.
So.
That's badger fantastic. Right.
That's exactly how it works. That's incredibly
badger.
Oh, I said the word. Oh, no! luckily we could say the word.
That's it. You're fired.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you go outside and play hide and go badger yourself?
I screwed my own badger. That's right. Well, here's the thing. There's a couple of segments. I mean, we're pretty much done with that part of the show. So, and we haven't heard anything from Rob, so we might let him talk for a minute here, assuming he's like still with us. Speaking of podcasts putting people to sleep, hello. Did Rob go away? Is Rob gone?
I'm still here.
All right, he's still there.
He's like, what I miss?
Okay, so here's what's going to happen for now. I'm going to go get myself a scotch so I can do segment 7 or 6 or whatever segment it is nowadays.
Sorry, I should have grabbed a bottle. You can grab me a bottle of water, a couple of bottles of water.
Like, yeah, I can go do that as well. And then I'm going to play a song.
Man, y'all are just as crazy as you sound on the podcast in real life.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I kind of went a little lazy tonight, but I think this will be good. I hope it'll be good. Mm-hmm. So what I did was, since I didn't have time to go to Jamendo or any of the other sites and look for music to download and play for tonight's show, I went straight to our good old buddy Jonathan Colton. So Jonathan Colton has a new album that's coming out at the end of this month called Solid State. He's been working on it for a long time, and he's released one of the songs from it called All This Time. And there's a video to go along with it and all of that, a full, like, production video and everything. And I have not heard this song yet. So,
wow. So, the great Jonathan worshiper has not heard the
song
yet.
That's right. I have not heard the song yet. This song got mentioned in the New York Times.
Cool.
About up-and-coming and artists of interest.
So it's fake news.
So, yeah, fake news. That's right. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and play this song. It's called All This Time off of Jonathan Colton's Solid State album, which, like I said, will be out April 28th, and you can pre-order it if you go to solidstate.jonathancolton.com. So let's play it and see if we all like it. All This Time by Jonathan Colton from the new Solid State album, which will be coming out in about 3 weeks' time. So very cool.
Yeah, another
that was pretty good. I like that.
A very cool tidbit about Jonathan is he's known as a geek rocker, but right now, Amy Mann, who was the vocalist and bassist for Till Tuesday.
Yep.
He is actually her guitar player. She's on tour right now. He's her guitar player right now and vocalist on tour with her. So, and they're actually going to be in Chicago in a couple of weeks. And Jonathan went, "Hey, you better come to the show." So we're going to Chicago at the end of the month. So, but yeah, he has, Jonathan has a lot of very cool, you know, again, geek rocky things. You know, talks about, let's see here, what are some of our favorite Jonathan Colton songs? Skullcrusher Mountain.
Well, yeah, all the big ones. But yeah. I think our mutual favorite is Talk with George. Yeah, that's just such a great song. It's like totally out of left field. It's basically, it's a song about the life of George Plimpton. It's like, why is there a song about this thing? But if you listen to it, it's just amazing. And maybe if anyone wants to hang around at the end of the actual program, I can play Talk with George, because we certainly don't mind listening to it over and over again. So. But yeah, positive vibes for the song anyway from the chat room, so that's good. Jonas in the chat room is mentioning Song a Week. There was a thing that Jonathan Colton did that actually sort of vaulted him into internet musician fandom, which is his Thing a Week project. He had a couple of like little EPs that he released before that, but then he embarked on this project called Thing a Week, where he actually put out four albums, where each song was a song that he wrote, produced, and released
once per week
for a solid year. There's quite a bit of great stuff on there. There's a couple of things that are, you know, sort of semi-forgettable, but that's going to happen when you sort of produce that way. But yeah, it's a lot of great music, and that's what, you know, vaulted him into stardom and sort of, you know, got him to where he is now, which is, you know, pretty amazing. Right now, he is filling entire cruise ships once a year.
Yeah.
There, you know how there are like the fan cruises where you go see like, you know, Kiss play or, you know,
yeah, Jonathan's
or Leonard Skinner or whatever, where they have a cruise ship and you go and see these concerts and everything. Well, he has his own cruise ship once a year. I mean, that's where he's at now.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
And a weird turn of events. This was kind of funny. There's a sisters out of Oregon, I believe, or Washington State, called the Double Clicks. I did not realize this until one of a really good friend of mine. He used to be a professor at the local college in Springfield. He was their computer science professor. That's how we met him. And he was like, "You realize that my nieces are the Double Clicks, right?" Because I mentioned something about Jonathan one day when I was, you know, emailing him or whatever. And he was like, "Aren't they on a cruise with him right now?" And I was like, yeah, they're one of the bands that goes on his cruise every year." He's like, "Yeah, those are my nieces." He's like, "Next time they're in town visiting, I'll invite you over for dinner." And I was like, "Okay." So
file that in the small world department.
Yeah. Right? So I actually emailed him and went, "Well, okay, so we have mutual friends both ways. You know, we know Jonathan, friends with Jonathan. Your uncle was at my house 30 minutes ago." And the girls are like, "Okay, that's a little weird."
Yeah.
You know, so
one of these days we'll get to go on that cruise too, I think. We'll see. He's doing number 8. I think this next one is his 8th. I think it's his 8th one. So There you go. Anyway, so moving on from the music, which seemed to be a big hit.
Yay.
It's Cheryl's Recipe Corner. So
No. We have announcements of feedback.
No, we... That's fine. Yeah. We'll stick Eric in here. Fine. All right.
As an announcement.
All right. It is true. All right. So Eric is here not because he's interested in our program, but because he wants to talk about something.
Poor Eric.
Yeah, just listening to the program, becoming more and more interested. This is awesome.
Oh, good. Well, at least, see, now we'll let you talk. Okay. All right. So what do you have to say, Eric?
Wow, that sounded kind of snotty.
Didn't it? I can give him a badger if we want. Here you go. Here's one for you.
Badger.
There you go. All right.
Okay. This is like one of those morning DJ shows with...
Right. Exactly.
Do you know... Wait, whoa. Before we go on, do you know who Adam Curry is?
Yeah.
Well, I do.
Do you know who Adam Curry is?
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking to Eric specifically.
I believe I do. He's like, he's Tim Curry's son, right?
No.
Adam Curry was an MTV VJ, and he's widely considered the godfather of podcasting. He's the one who sort of... He's the podfather. He invented the medium.
Okay.
So do we know who Adam Curry is now?
Yes.
Okay. This is what Adam Curry had to say about us. And yes, I get another opportunity to play it. So
there's all these podcasts, Linux in the Ham Shack, Ham Nation, Ham Radio Today. And let me tell you something. They all suck balls, every single one of them. It's horrible.
There we go. So, that's the good word from Adam Curry. So now you know what kind of podcast you're on. Go for it.
Linux and the Ham Shack was young, needed the money, had to suck those balls.
Yeah, that's there
right.
you go.
That's right.
Oh, boy, blue. Actually,
badger balls, so it was...
kind of a delicate process.
I'm actually the head organizer here for the March for Science, and you guys are gracious enough to want me to come on and yammer on about it. So the March for Science started in D.C. early this year in January, and people heard about it and got excited, and satellite marches started popping up all over the nation. Springfield was one of them. I came on board in February and started the Springfield, Missouri one here. And to date, actually, we have in the U.S. over 300 marches going on, and across the nation is over 420. Across the world, globally, 420 marches. And it's happening on April 22nd, Earth Day, and it's really to stand up and tell all of our elected leaders that they need to take science seriously when they're considering government policy. They need to seriously start seeing the benefit in funding scientific research. I'd assume that you guys are too, but I love science and have loved it all my life. It's just been absolutely incredible what science has done for myself and for my family. And when I look at my life and just even talking to you, I just can't thank science enough, even though it doesn't really give a crap about me. But the March for Science is coming up on April 22nd, and it's happening all across the globe. So if you're listening out there, there's probably one happening near you. And you can go to marchforscience.com, check out their satellite map, and find a local event near you. In fact, Bill, where do you live?
Billings, Montana.
In Montana?
Yep.
Let's see what we got here. I'm pulling
it's like, wait. Map.
Oh, my. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 going on in Bozeman, Billings, Montana. You got one in Billings, Montana, and... You're going to be going to that. I'll shoot you the link in the IRC.
Take the kids, go. Yeah. Check out,
what about Rob? He lives in like something, New York.
Where do you live, Rob?
It's called Oneonta, New York.
Oneonta, there we go.
Oneonta. Where is that located?
Upstate.
That's about an hour west of Albany.
Okay. You've got Well, you can look at the map. Plattsburgh, Albany. Oh yeah, there's one in Albany and there's one in Scolari.
Use the internet, which is powered by science.
So, anyways, there's a ton. There's one even happening on Greenland. I like just happened to type in Greenland and. Holy crap, there is a march where I think six people are attending. No penguins. No penguins, because they're all on the southern hemisphere.
No, I'm sorry, you're incorrect. You said six people. It's the six people.
Yeah, the six people.
The whole town is going to be.
And they're all driving their fjords over there. Yeah.
Very nice. We love puns on this program, so that's great.
Oh, good. No badgers over the puns, right?
Nope. No, we do not badger puns, that's for sure.
So, yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it. I just want to come on and encourage you guys listening to stand up for science, because we've been silent for too long, and we can see oftentimes, and especially in my opinion, what's going on in this current administration, how they're trying to hamstring science and shove in opinions, political opinions. And that just doesn't serve us, nor does it serve the better good. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. I think that's the very first bit of live feedback we've ever had. So, I know. In 187 episodes, it'd be great if I could speak. That's great. So we really appreciate that. And if you enjoy science, get out and march for science. That would be very cool. All right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There's one more thing.
Oh, there's one more thing.
There's one more thing. Eric has a friend.
Oh, boy.
I just have one.
Yeah, he just has one. That's it. Yeah, his wife's not even his friend. Yeah. He has a friend that works for Foundation Beyond Belief, and the friend is actually wanting to be interviewed or maybe put an ad or something on other podcasts for anybody out there listening that does their own podcasts. To help raise funds for the Humanist Service Corps. So if anybody out there is interested, shoot us an email and we will make sure that it gets to Eric, and Eric will get it to his guy, and everybody will live happily ever after. So.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So. All right. So now we can talk about food.
Yes, we can talk about food.
Wait, one more.
Oh, no. Bill, shut up. We're going to talk about food.
Oh, man, food.
Yeah, food. All right. Let's talk about food.
Just kidding. I'm sorry. You've been overruled. You got That's to talk right. too
I'm,
much
I'm
tonight.
I'm going to go to Ham Nation. But,
you know. All right, Bill, we'll let you get one in. What do you want? What do you want to announce? Come on.
They're just going to air my my segment for AR Newsline and then the Ham.
We don't care about Ham Nation. Screw that.
Yeah, I know. But I like it. I get a lot of feedback every time I get a spot on there with 85DW. So,
when are they doing that?
This Wednesday. It'll be on the AR Newsline report that he records for the show there.
Yeah, well,
you mean like in 2 days, which means no one's going to hear this before that. So,
oh, well, that's true. But all the live people.
Yeah.
So glad you could put that out there for Ben.
Well, you'll be able to play it back, right? Because they have, you know.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to hear me, hopefully he'll fix it so I don't sound so bad. The recording they put out on Friday. There was definitely some weird artifacting going on. I had to talk to him. I was like, what am I sending you that it gets so garbled? And I realized I've sent him like a variable bitrate MP3 over for to include in the AR Newsline report. And you know, he's nice. Down mixing it to like 128. And I think somehow it's just getting all garbled or something like that. So I was like, well, I'm going to start sending you 128 because... You know, I was like, I hate playing something back and it doesn't sound the same. It's like, that's just weird.
Well, you can sound like the teacher from the Peanuts or whatever. Yeah.
Now, this is the other one of the ham radio podcasts that sucks balls. Is that right?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Ham radio sucks balls.
Yeah, absolutely. Every podcast except for Adam Curry sucks balls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No agenda or whatever else.
Right.
And he'll tell you all about it.
So special.
All right. Food.
Food. Food. Food. Okay.
Cheryl's Recipe Corner.
Okay. Cheryl's Recipe Corner. Russ and I have both not... We were not big fans of asparagus. In fact, neither of us would touch it until about 10 years ago when we went to dinner with some friends and they said, here, you must try asparagus. And we're now hooked. So anyway, the recipe I picked for this week is baked asparagus with a balsamic butter sauce, which I've had, not this specific recipe, but I've had it fixed, prepared this way before, and I loved it. Russ is not big on balsamic vinegar, so I think he was kind of it, but he coped, he dealt, he'll survive. So anyway, this would be great for family dinners or Christmas dinner, Easter, whatever you want to fix it for. And you need some fresh asparagus, trimmed, some cooking spray, salt and pepper, butter, soy sauce, and balsamic vinegar. And you bake this for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, until it's tender. And then put a little bit of butter drizzled over the top with soy sauce and balsamic vinegar. And you have very tasty asparagus for dinner. So,
well, that was quick and easy.
That was a quick and easy recipe. Yeah. So,
all right. Fantastic. Got to like, you know, how many ingredients are that? Five? Yeah. Can't argue with that.
Now, the big concern is how is it coming out the other end?
Well, we don't talk about that here.
Okay.
All right. What does it taste like?
The end result, not our responsibility.
Right. We tell you how to make the food. The after effects are up to you. So all right. Let's see. Ted says hollandaise is good with a quart of hollandaise on it.
Well, all right.
I'm assuming he's talking about asparagus, not the
hollandaise.
Yeah, not hollandaise on top of hollandaise. So.
I think next week I'm going to do like doggy biscuits or something.
Yeah, there you go. KD5HQN says we've redeemed ourselves because we like asparagus now.
Yes.
So. There we go.
Yeah, Russ has gotten me to eat broccoli.
Broccoli. That's some good stuff. But you still don't eat cauliflower, and actually cauliflower is much better than broccoli. Yeah, so
I'm trying. I'm really trying. Just not a fan. So.
All right. Well, you're never going to get me to eat green beans, so we're even, I guess.
Or beets.
Yeah, that too. Can't stand beets.
Mm, yeah, green beans and beets are really good.
Oh, I heard
it. Yeah, I like the green beans.
Yeah, green beans are where it's at.
Yeah, I love pickled beets, and Russ just
boo. No, that's nasty. That is nasty. So.
Green beans are one of my favorites.
See, everybody likes green beans, you know, except for you.
This is what I say to everybody who likes something I don't. There's more for you. Okay. So that being said, talking about things that I like and other people don't, we're going to move on to my whiskey corner. So I poured myself a glass. I went a little different this week, and I'm not drinking a scotch.
Shame on you.
Well, no, there's no shame in not drinking scotch. Come on. No. What I am drinking, though, is a single malt Indian whiskey. So this is called Amrut Fusion. Amrut is Alpha Mike Romeo Uniform Tango. And this is the fusion version of it. It's a single malt Indian whiskey, so it's not a scotch, as we've already established. One nice thing about Indian whiskeys, is that they tend to be, like a lot of Indian cuisine, sort of spicy. They have an actual spice note, which is nice. So I've got this. It's actually a light color. It's a nice golden color. It's a light gold color. It's not a dark amber or anything like that. This is actually 100 proof, so it's fairly strong in the whiskey world.
So it's half alcohol.
That's right.
Yeah.
It is half alcohol. So I'm nosing it right now. If you're nosing strong liquor, make sure you keep your mouth open. Otherwise, you'll get bowled over by it. It has a tiny little bit of peat, which is surprising. I don't know that there are any peat bogs in India, but there is a little peat there. There's a little of the oak note from the casks. It's citrusy for sure. There's like lemon and vanilla. I don't really get much more of it off than that. My nose and my palate are not the most refined in the world. So I just kind of tell you what I got here. So let's taste it. It's actually like I wasn't really tasting it. Now I'm really tasting it. you can taste the peat in it. There's pepper, almost like a black pepper, a little cayenne. Definitely some citrus, like orange. There's still vanilla and oak. Yeah, and a little bit of herbal, I'm not sure, kind of like a fennel, maybe? Something like that. Fennel or parsley, or I don't know, something herbal for sure.
Parsley is pepper.
Yeah, so there's that peppery thing, too, because there was like pepper and cayenne and that kind of thing. And it's very stout. It's got a little bit of, like, even on the top of the mouth and down the throat, it's definitely, I mean, I'm sure the 100 proof is part of it, but there's definitely some spice heat there as well. So definitely different in the whiskey world, the single malt world. So if you're looking for a little change from your scotches or maybe your like barrel strength bourbons and stuff like that, you could give Amrut Fusion a try. I think the bottle price on it is somewhere around $60 US for a fifth. So that's about where that's at. I'm going to give this an 85 on a scale of 0 to 100. So there you go. Not bad. Amrut Fusion, give it a try.
We'll mention Hamvention.
Oh, yeah, we didn't mention Hamvention. I guess we should do that because it's getting close now. The generosity campaign is still up and going. We did receive a funds distribution from the current donation, so we will be able to purchase the booth. We're already booked. Bill's flying in, so where this thing's all happening, but anything we get beyond this point will help us to purchase the things that we'll be bringing with us, which will be like the distributions, promo items to bring. So it looks like we're going to be having pint glasses, shot glasses, t-shirts, thumb drives, and there'll be 8 gig thumb drives. So they'll be decent ones.
What are you going to put on the thumb drives?
Well, we're going to put Linux distros on them. So people can then boot and install distros. And then of course they're just 8 gig thumb drives that, at that point, so you can use them for whatever you want to. So links to the generosity campaign, of course, will be in the show notes. They're already on the website. I'm tweeting and putting on Facebook and Google Plus information about them every week or so, because I don't want to inundate people, with our campaign. But if you're willing to donate a few bucks, please do so. There's lots of perks, and if you want one of the perks, make sure you click on the perk links. Don't click on the donate button up at the top. And if you can't donate financially, please go ahead and get on the social media networks or go talk to your friends, your neighbors, your family, your clubs, or whatever you're interested in. Just tell everybody about it. We want to have as much stuff. We want to bring as much with us so we can offer as much as we possibly can at Hamvention this year. And it's going to be a good time. Bill's going to be with us, and it's just going to be like listening to the show. It's going to be fantastic. And because the podcast is actually supposed to be recorded on the Monday before Hamvention, and we're not actually going to be able to do it that Monday, we are going to record whatever episode number that is at Hamvention. So it'll be a totally live episode, and hopefully we'll be able to stream it. We don't know if we will be able to at this point, but hopefully we can. So that should be interesting, and hopefully we can get some people who are at the show to jump in and be a part of it. That'll be it'll be a first for us, and that would be a lot of fun, I think. All right, so guess what? We're down to the social media roundup.
Okay, so support subscriptions. We have John Fochke, Bob Yerke, James Blocker, Robert Pitts, Dylan Engel, Stephen Sainer, Edward Donnelly, Scott Pettigrew, John Clark, Paul Griffith, Michael Connolly, Donald Gover, Kevin Murray, Alan Wilson, Brian Smith, Ronald Ikey, Robert Doherty, Christopher Weaver, Jonas Rulo, Michael Aiello, Darren King, Jeremy Hall, Robert Halliday, Wayne Carpenter, Doug Rutter, Johnny Kinsey, Bill Stearns, Bill Piotr, and Charlie Brown.
All right, and because of an unfortunate problem with the Etherpad, we will not be able to bring the rest of the social media roundup to you this week, and we're going to have to do some tricky skull badgery in post-production to get the end of this program out to you, which we're doing right now. We will catch up with all of our new mailing list subscribers and followers on the different social media networks next time. But for this time, I'm going to press the outro button, and then we're going to get on to the end of the show. You can become an LHS ambassador. Visit the website for upcoming events and information on how you can represent Linux in the Ham Shack at a nearby LinuxCon or Ham Fest. We love feedback. You can email us at info@lhspodcast.info. You can comment on an episode on the website, post on Google+, Facebook, or Twitter, or leave a voicemail for us at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit our IRC channel, Octothorpe LHS Podcast, on the Freenode Network, and subscribe to our mailing list. Show merchandise from coffee mugs to t-shirts to wall clocks and lots of other stuff can be purchased at www.cafepress.com/LHS Podcast. You can also help the show by clicking on the sponsored ads in the right-hand column of the homepage. Listen live every other Monday night at 8 o'clock Central Time. That's early Tuesday morning, 0100 Zulu in the summer, and 0200 Zulu in the winter. Our recording schedule and countdown timer to the next episode are on the website. Please check out http://lhspodcast.info for everything you ever wanted to know about the show. Thank you to all of our listeners, live and quasi-live, past, present, and future, and to those who have given us their time, ears, shares, and money. We appreciate each and every one of you. So, signing off for me, Russ, K5TUX, Cheryl, who sits across from me, Bill, NE4RD, who sits somewhere in Billings, Montana, and our guest tonight, Eric Wells, and Rob, Kilo Delta 2, Mike Sierra Romeo, from up in Oneonta, New York. Thanks for sitting in with us. I hope everybody enjoyed the program. This has been episode 187 of Linux in the Ham Shack. The next time we get together with all of you, it's going to be at Hamvention. So take care, everyone. See you there. And catch you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye now.
Lost my place.